Chapter 55. Charging System Diagnosis and Service. Charging System Testing and Service. Battery State of Charge. The charging system can be tested as part of a routine vehicle inspection or to determine the reason for a no charge or reduced charging circuit performance. The battery must be at least 75% charged before testing the alternator and the charging system. A weak or defective battery causes inaccurate test results. If in doubt, replace the battery with a known good shop battery for testing. Charging Voltage Test. The charging voltage test is the easiest way to check the charging system voltage of the battery. Use a digital multimeter to check the voltage, as follows. Step 1. Select DC volts. Step 2. Connect the red meter lead to the positive terminal of the battery and the black meter lead to the negative terminal of the battery. Note, the polarity of the meter leads is not too important when using a digital multimeter. If the meter leads are connected backward on the battery, the resulting readout simply has a negative sign in front of the voltage reading. Step 3. Start the engine and increase the engine speed to about 2000 RPM, or fast idle, and record the charging voltage. See Figure 55-1. Specifications for charging voltage equals 13.5 to 15 volts. If the voltage is too high, check that the alternator is properly grounded. If the voltage is lower than specifications, then there is a fault with the wiring or the alternator. If the wiring, fuses, and the connections are okay, then additional testing is required to help pinpoint the root cause. Replacement of the alternator and/or battery is often required if the charging voltage is not within factory specifications. If the alternator is computer controlled, a defective current sensor or PCM could be the reason for a no-charge condition. Refer to Figure 55-1. The digital multimeter should be set to read DC volts, with the red lead connected to the positive battery terminal and the black meter lead connected to the negative battery terminal. Scan testing the charging circuit. Most vehicles that use a computer-controlled charging system can be diagnosed using a scan tool. Not only can the charging voltage be monitored, but also, in many vehicles, the field circuit can be controlled and the output voltage monitored to check that the system is operating correctly. See Figure 55-2. Refer to Figure 55-2. A scan tool can be used to diagnose charging system problems. Frequently asked question. What is a full fielding test? Full fielding is a procedure used on older non-computerized vehicles for bypassing the voltage regulator that could be used to determine if the alternator is capable of producing its designed output. This test is no longer performed for the following reasons. Reason number 1. The voltage regulator is built into the alternator, requiring that the entire assembly be replaced even if just the regulator is defective. And reason number 2. When the regulator is bypassed, the alternator can produce a high voltage, over 100 volts in some cases, which could damage all of the electronic circuits in the vehicle. Always follow the vehicle manufacturer's recommended testing procedures. Tech tip. Use a test light to check for a defective fusible link. Most alternators use a fusible link or mega fuse between the output terminal and the positive terminal of the battery. If this fusible link or fuse is defective, blown, then the charging system does not operate at all. Many alternators have been replaced repeatedly because of a blown fusible link that was not discovered until later. A quick and easy test to check if the fusible link is okay is to touch a test light to the output terminal. With the other end of the test light attached to a good ground, the fusible link or mega fuse is okay if the light comes on. This test confirms that the circuit between the alternator and the battery has continuity. See Figure 55-3. Refer to Figure 55-3. Before replacing an alternator, the wise technician checks that battery voltage is present at the output and battery voltage sense terminals. If no voltage is detected, then there is a fault in the wiring. Note, some charging systems, such as those on many Honda Acura vehicles, use an electronic load detection circuit that energizes the field circuit only when an electrical load is detected. For example, if the engine is running and there are no accessories on, the voltage read at the battery may be 12.6 volts, which could indicate that the charging system is not operating. In this situation, turning on the headlights or an accessory should cause the computer to activate the field circuit, and the alternator should produce normal charging voltage. Drive belt inspection and adjustment. Belt visual inspection. It is generally recommended that all belts be inspected regularly and replaced as needed. Replace any serpentine belt that has more than 3 cracks in any one rib that appears in a 3-inch span. Check service information for the specified procedure and recommended replacement interval. See Figure 55-4. Belt tension measurement. If the vehicle does not use a belt tensioner, then a belt tension gauge is needed to achieve the specified belt tension. Install the belt and operate the engine with all of the accessories turned on to run in the belt for at least 5 minutes. Adjust the tension of the accessory drive belt to factory specifications or use the following table for an example of the proper tension based on the size of the belt. There are 4 ways that vehicle manufacturers specify that the belt tension is within factory specifications. Number 1. Belt tension gauge. A belt tension gauge is needed to determine if it is at the specified belt tension. Install the belt and operate the engine with all of the accessories turned on to run in the belt for at least 5 minutes. Adjust the tension of the accessory drive belt to factory specifications, or see chart 55-1 for an example of the proper tension based on the size of the belt. Number 2. Marks on a tensioner. Many tensioners have marks that indicate the normal operating tension range for the accessory drive belt. Check service information for the preferred location of the tensioner mark. See figure 55-5. Number 3. Torque wrench reading. Some vehicle manufacturers specify that a beam-type torque wrench be used to determine the torque needed to rotate the tensioner. If the torque reading is below specifications, the tensioner must be replaced. And number 4. Deflection. Depress the belt between the two pulleys that are the farthest apart. The flex or deflection should be half of an inch, or 13 millimeters. Refer to figure 55-4. Figure A. This accessory drive belt is worn and requires replacement. Newer belts are made from ethylene propylene diene monomer abbreviated, EPDM. This rubber does not crack like older belts and may not show wear, even though the ribs do wear and can cause slippage. Refer to figure 55-4. Figure B. A belt wear gauge being used to check a belt. It should fit tightly, but if it is able to be moved side to side, then the belt is worn and should be replaced. Refer to chart 55-1. Typical belt tension for various widths of belts. Tension is the force needed to depress the belt as displayed on a belt tension gauge. Refer to figure 55-5. Check service information for the exact marks where the tensioner should be located for proper belt tension. Refer to figure 55-6. This overrunning alternator dampener abbreviated, OAD, is longer than an overrunning alternator pulley abbreviated, OAP, because it contains a dampener spring, as well as a one-way clutch. Be sure to check that it locks in one direction. Overrunning clutch. If low or no alternator output is found, remove the alternator drive belt and check the overrunning alternator pulley or overrunning alternator dampener for proper operation. Both types of overrunning clutches use a one-way clutch. Therefore, the pulley should freewheel in one direction and rotate the alternator rotor when rotated in the opposite direction. See figure 55-6. A special thule, such as LAL number 57650 or Gates number 91024, is needed to repair the alternator. See figure 55-7. AC ripple voltage check. Principles. A good alternator should produce very little AC voltage or current output. It is the purpose of the diodes in the alternator to rectify or convert most AC voltage into DC voltage. While it is normal to measure some AC voltage from an alternator, excessive AC voltage, called AC ripple, is undesirable and indicates a fault with the rectifier diodes or stator windings inside the alternator. Refer to figure 55-7. A special tool is needed to remove and install overrunning alternator pulleys or dampeners. Refer to figure 55-8. Testing AC ripple at the output terminal of the alternator is more accurate than testing at the battery due to the resistance of the wiring between the alternator and the battery. The reading shown on the meter, set to AC volts, is only 78 millivolts, far below what the reading is if a diode is defective. Testing AC ripple voltage. The procedure to check for AC ripple voltage includes the following steps. Step 1. Set the digital meter to read AC volts. Step 2. Start the engine and operate it at 2000 RPM, or fast idle. Step 3. Connect the voltmeter leads to the positive and negative battery terminals. Step 4. Turn on the headlights to provide an electrical load on the alternator. Note, a more accurate reading can be obtained by touching the meter lead to the output or battery terminal of the alternator. See figure 55-8. The results should be interpreted as follows. If the rectifier diodes are good, the voltmeter should read less than 400 millivolts AC. If the reading is over 500 millivolts AC, the rectifier diodes are defective. Note, many conductance testers, such as Medtronic and Snap-on, automatically test for AC ripple. Refer to Figure 55-9. Charging system voltage can be easily checked at the lighter plug by connecting a lighter plug to the voltmeter through a double banana plug. Tech tip: the lighter plug trick. Battery voltage measurements can be read through the lighter socket. Simply construct a test tool using a lighter plug at one end of a length of 2 conductor wire and the other end connected to a double banana plug. The double banana plug fits most meters in the common, or, COM, terminal and the volt terminal of the meter. This is handy to use while road testing the vehicle under real-life conditions. Both DC voltage and AC ripple voltage can be measured. See Figure 55-9. Testing AC ripple current. All alternators should create direct current if the diodes and stator windings are functioning correctly. A mini clamp on meter capable of measuring AC amperes can be used to check the alternator. A good alternator should produce less than 10% of its rated amperage output in AC ripple amperes. For example, an alternator rated at 100 ampere should not produce more than 10 amperes AC ripple. It is normal for a good alternator to produce 3 or 4 amperes of AC ripple current to the battery. Only if the AC ripple current exceeds 10% of the rating of the alternator should the alternator be repaired or replaced. Test procedure to measure the AC current to the battery. Perform the following steps. Step 1. Start the engine and turn on the lights to create an electrical load on the alternator. Step 2. Using a mini clamp on digital multimeter, place the clamp around either all of the positive battery cables or all of the negative battery cables. An AC, DC current clamp adapter can also be used with a conventional digital multimeter set on the DC millivolt scale. Step 3. To check for AC current ripple, switch the meter to read AC amperes and record the reading. Read the meter display. Step 4. The result should be within 10% of the specified alternator rating. A reading of greater than 10 amperes AC indicates defective alternator diodes. See Figure 55-10. Refer to Figure 55-10. A mini clamp on meter can be used to measure alternator output, as shown here, 105.2 amperes. Then the meter can be used to check AC ripple by selecting AC amps on the rotary dial. AC ripple should be less than 10% of the DC output. Charging system voltage drop testing. Alternator wiring. For the proper operation of any charging system, there must be good electrical connections between the battery positive terminal and the alternator output terminal. The alternator must also be properly grounded to the engine block. Many manufacturers of vehicles run the lead from the output terminal of the alternator to other connectors or junction blocks that are electrically connected to the positive terminal of the battery. If there is high resistance, a high voltage drop, in these connections or in the wiring itself, the battery is not properly charged. Voltage drop test procedure. When there is a suspected charging system problem, with or without a charge indicator light on, simply follow these steps to measure the voltage drop of the insulated, power side, charging circuit. Step 1. Start the engine and run it at a fast idle, about 2000 engine RPM. Step 2. Turn on the headlights to ensure an electrical load on the charging system. Step 3. Using any voltmeter set to read DC volts, connect the positive test lead, red, to the output terminal of the alternator. Attach the negative test lead, black, to the positive post of the battery. The results should be interpreted as follows. Number 1. If there is less than a 400 millivolts reading, then all wiring and connections are satisfactory. Number 2. If the voltmeter reads higher than 400 millivolts, there is excessive resistance, voltage drop, between the alternator output terminal and the positive terminal of the battery. Number 3. If the voltmeter reads battery voltage, or close to battery voltage, there is an open circuit between the battery and the alternator output terminal. To determine whether the alternator is correctly grounded, maintain the engine speed at 2000 RPM with the headlights on. Connect the positive voltmeter lead to the case of the alternator and the negative voltmeter lead to the negative terminal of the battery. The voltmeter should read less than 0.2 volts if the alternator is properly grounded. If the reading is over 0.2 volts, connect one end of an auxiliary ground wire to the case of the alternator and the other end to a good engine ground. See Figure 55-11. Refer to Figure 55-11. Voltmeter hookup to test the voltage drop of the charging circuit. Tech tip: use a fuse jumper wire as a diagnostic tool. When diagnosing an alternator charging problem, try using a fuse jumper wire to connect the positive and negative terminals of the alternator directly to the positive and negative terminals of the battery. If a definite improvement is noticed, the problem is in the wiring of the vehicle. Higher resistance, due to corroded connections or loose grounds, can cause low alternator output, repeated regulator failures, slow cranking, and discharged batteries. A voltage drop test of the charging system can also be used to locate excessive resistance, high voltage drop, in the charging circuit, but using a fuse jumper wire is often faster and easier. Alternator output test. Preliminary checks. An alternator output test measures the current of the alternator. A charging circuit may be able to produce correct charging circuit voltage, but not be able to produce adequate amperage output. If in doubt about charging system output, first check the condition of the alternator drive belt. With the engine off, attempt to rotate the fan of the alternator by hand. Replace or tighten the drive belt if the alternator fan can be rotated this way. Carbon pile test procedure. A carbon pile tester uses plates of carbon to create an electrical load. A carbon pile test is used to load test a battery and or an alternator. See Figure 55-12. The testing procedure for alternator output is as follows. Step 1. Connect the starting and charging test leads according to the manufacturer's instructions, which usually include installing the amp clamp around the output wire near the alternator. Step 2. Turn off all electrical accessories to be sure that the tester is measuring the true output of the alternator. Step 3. Start the engine and operate it at 2000 RPM, or fast idle. Turn the load increase control slowly to obtain the highest reading on the ammeter scale. Do not allow the voltage to drop below 12.6 volts. Note the ampere reading. Step 4. Add 5 to 7 amperes to the reading because this amount of current is used by the ignition system to operate the engine. Step 5. Compare the output reading to factory specifications. The rated output may be stamped on the alternator or can be found in service information. Caution: never disconnect a battery cable with the engine running. All vehicle manufacturers warn not to do this, because this was an old test, before alternators, to see if a generator could supply current to operate the ignition system without a battery. When a battery cable is removed, the alternator, or PCM, loses the battery voltage sense signal. Without a battery voltage sense circuit, the alternator does one of two things, depending on the make and model of vehicle. The alternator output can exceed 100 volts. This high voltage may damage not only the alternator, but also electrical components in the vehicle, including the PCM and all electronic devices. The alternator stops charging as a fail-safe measure to protect the alternator and all of the electronics in the vehicle from being damaged due to excessively high voltage. Refer to Figure 55-12. A typical tester used to test batteries as well as the cranking and charging system. Always follow the operating instructions. Minimum required alternator output. Purpose: all charging systems must be able to supply the electrical demands of the electrical system. If lights and accessories are used constantly and the alternator cannot supply the necessary ampere output, the battery is drained. To determine the minimum electrical load requirements, connect an inductive ammeter probe around either battery cable or the alternator output cable. See Figure 55-13. Note: if using an inductive pickup ammeter, be certain that the pickup is over all the wires leaving the battery terminal. Failure to include the small body ground wire from the negative battery terminal to the body or the small positive wire, if testing from the positive side, greatly decreases the current flow readings. Procedure: after connecting an ammeter correctly in the battery circuit, continue as follows. Step number 1. Start the engine and operate to about 2000 RPM, or fast idle. Step number 2. Turn the heat selector to air conditioning, if the vehicle is so equipped. Step number 3. Turn the blower motor to high speed. Step number 4. Turn the headlights on bright. Step number 5. Turn on the rear defogger. Step number 6. Turn on the windshield wipers. Step number 7. Turn on any other accessories that may be used continuously. Do not operate the horn, power door locks, or other units that are not used for more than a few seconds. And step number 8. Observe the ammeter. The current indicated is the electrical load that the alternator is able to exceed to keep the battery fully charged. Test results. The minimum acceptable alternator output is 5 amperes greater than the accessory load. A negative, or discharge, reading indicates that the alternator is not capable of supplying the current, or amperes, that may be needed. Refer to Figure 55-13. The best place to install a charging system tester amp probe is around the alternator output terminal wire, as shown in the figure. Refer to Figure 55-14. Replacing an alternator is not always as easy as it is from a Buick with a 3800 V6, where the alternator is easy to access. Many alternators are difficult to access and require the removal of other components. Tech tip: bigger is not always better. Many technicians are asked to install a higher output alternator to allow the use of emergency equipment or other high amperage equipment, such as a high wattage sound system. Although many higher output units can be physically installed, it is important not to forget to upgrade the wiring and the fusible links in the alternator circuit. Failure to upgrade the wiring could lead to overheating. The usual failure locations are at junctions or electrical connectors. Alternator removal. After diagnosis of the charging system has determined that there is a fault with the alternator, it must be removed safely from the vehicle. Always check service information for the exact procedure to follow on the vehicle being serviced. A typical removal procedure includes the following steps. Step 1. Before disconnecting the negative battery cable, use a test light or a voltmeter and check for battery voltage at the output terminal of the alternator. A complete circuit must exist between the alternator and the battery. If there is no voltage at the alternator output terminal, check for a blown fusible link or other electrical circuit fault. Step 2. Disconnect the negative terminal from the battery. Use a memory saver to maintain radio, memory seats, and other functions. Step 3. Remove the accessory drive belt that drives the alternator. Step 4. Remove electrical wiring, fasteners, spacers, and brackets, as necessary, and remove the alternator from the vehicle. See Figure 55-14. Tech tip: the sniff test. When checking for the root cause of an alternator failure, one test that a technician could do is to sniff, or smell, the alternator. If the alternator smells like a dead rat, or rancid smell, the stator windings have been overheated by trying to charge a discharged or defective battery. If the battery voltage is continuously low, the voltage regulator continues supplying full field current to the alternator. The voltage regulator is designed to cycle on and off to maintain a narrow charging system voltage range. If the battery voltage is continually below the cutoff point of the voltage regulator, the alternator is continually producing current in the stator windings. This constant charging can often overheat the stator and burn the insulating varnish covering the stator windings. If the alternator fails the sniff test, the technician should replace the stator and other alternator components that are found to be defective and replace or recharge and test the battery. Refer to Figure 55-15. Explanation of clock positions. Because the four through bolts are equally spaced, it is possible for an alternator to be installed in one of four different clock positions. The connector position is determined by viewing the alternator from the diode end with the threaded adjusting lug in the up or 12 o'clock position. Select the 3 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 9 o'clock, or 12 o'clock position to match the unit being replaced. Frequently asked question: what is a clock position? Most alternators of a particular manufacturer can be used on a variety of vehicles, which may require wiring connections placed in various locations. For example, a Chevrolet and a Buick alternator may be identical except for the position of the rear section containing the electrical connections. The four through bolts that hold the two halves together are equally spaced, therefore, the rear alternator housing can be installed in any one of four positions to match the wiring needs of various models. Always check the clock position of the original and be sure that it matches the replacement unit. See Figure 55-15. Alternator disassembly. Disassembly procedure. Step 1. Mark the case with a scratch or with chalk to ensure proper reassembly of the alternator case. Step 2. After the through bolts have been removed, carefully separate the two halves. The stator windings must stay with the rear case. When this happens, the brushes and springs fall out. Step 3. Remove the rectifier assembly and voltage regulator. Refer to Figure 55-16. Testing an alternator rotor using an ohmmeter. Rotor testing. The slip rings on the rotor should be smooth and round, within 0.002 of an inch of being perfectly round. If grooved, the slip rings can be machined to provide a suitable surface for the brushes. Do not machine beyond the minimum slip ring dimension as specified by the manufacturer. If the slip rings are discolored or dirty, they can be cleaned with 400 grit or fine emery, polishing, cloth. The rotor must be turned while being cleaned to prevent flat spots on the slip rings. Measure the resistance between the slip rings using an ohmmeter. Typical resistance values and results include the following. Number 1. The resistance measured between either slip ring and the steel rotor shaft should be infinity or OL. If there is continuity, then the rotor is shorted to ground. Number 2. Rotor resistance range is normally between 2.4 and 6 ohms. Number 3. If the resistance is below specification, the rotor is shorted. Number 4. If the resistance is above specification, the rotor connections are corroded or open. If the rotor is found to be bad, it must be replaced or repaired. At a specialized shop. See Figure 55-16. Note, the cost of a replacement rotor may exceed the cost of an entire rebuilt alternator. Be certain, however, that the rebuilt alternator is rated at the same output as the original or higher. Refer to Figure 55-17. If the ohmmeter reads infinity between any two of the three stator windings, the stator is open and, therefore, defective. The ohmmeter should read infinity between any stator lead and the steel laminations. If the reading is less than infinity, the stator is grounded. Stator windings cannot be tested if shorted because the normal resistance is very low. Stator testing. The stator must be disconnected from the diodes or rectifiers before testing. Because all three windings of the stator are electrically connected, either Y or delta, an ohmmeter can be used to check a stator. There should be low resistance at all three stator leads. Continuity. There should not be continuity. In other words, there should be a meter reading of infinity ohms when the stator is tested between any stator lead and the metal stator core. If there is continuity, the stator is shorted to ground and must be repaired or replaced. See Figure 55-17. Note, because the resistance is very low for a normal stator, it is generally not possible to test for a shorted, copper-to-copper, stator. A shorted stator does, however, greatly reduce alternator output. An ohmmeter cannot detect an open stator if the stator is delta wound. The ohmmeter still indicates low resistance because all three windings are electrically connected. Testing the diode trio. Many alternators are equipped with a diode trio. A diode is an electrical one-way check valve that permits current to flow in only one direction. Because trio means three, a diode trio is three diodes connected together. See Figure 55-18. The diode trio is connected to all three stator windings. The current generated in the stator flows through the diode trio to the internal voltage regulator. The diode trio is designed to supply current for the field, rotor, and turns off the charge indicator light when the alternator voltage equals or exceeds the battery voltage. If one of the three diodes in the diode trio is defective, usually open, the alternator may produce close to normal output, however, the charge indicator light is on dimly. A diode trio should be tested with a digital multimeter. The meter should be set to the diode check position. The multimeter should indicate 500 to 700 millivolts, one-way in OL, or, over limit, after reversing the test leads and touching all three connectors of the diode trio. Refer to Figure 55-18. A diode trio can be tested using an analog, needle-type, ohmmeter or a digital meter set to diode check. Refer to Figure 22-19. A typical rectifier bridge that contains all six diodes in one replaceable assembly. Testing the rectifier. Terminology. The rectifier assembly usually is equipped with six diodes, including three positive diodes and three negative diodes, one positive and one negative for each winding of the stator. Meter setup. The rectifiers, or diodes, should be tested using a multimeter that is set to diode check position on the digital multimeter, abbreviated DMM. Because a diode, or rectifier, should allow current to flow in only one direction, each diode should be tested to determine if the diode allows current flow in one direction and blocks current flow in the opposite direction. To test some alternator diodes, it may be necessary to unsolder the stator connections. See Figure 55-19. Accurate testing is not possible unless the diodes are separated electrically from other alternator components. Refer to Figure 55-20. A brush holder assembly with new brushes installed. The holes and the brushes are used to hold the brushes up in the holder when it is installed in the alternator. After the rotor has been installed, the retaining pin is removed, which allows the brushes to contact the slip rings of the rotor. Testing procedure. Connect the leads to the leads of the diode, pigtail and housing of the rectifier bridge. Read the meter. Reverse the test leads. A good diode should have high resistance, or OL, one-way, reverse bias, and low voltage drop of 0.5 to 0.7 volts, or 500 to 700 millivolts, the other way, forward bias. Results. Open or shorted diodes must be replaced. Most alternators group or combine all positive and all negative diodes in one replaceable rectifier component. Reassembling the alternator. Brush holder replacement. Alternator carbon brushes often last for many years and require no scheduled maintenance. The life of the alternator brushes is extended because they conduct only the field, or rotor, current, which is normally only 2 to 5 amperes. The alternator brushes should be inspected when the alternator is disassembled and should be replaced when worn to less than half inch long. Brushes are commonly purchased assembled together in a brush holder. After the brushes are installed, usually retained by 2 or 3 screws, and the rotor is installed in the alternator housing, a brush retainer pin can be pulled out through an access hole in the rear of the alternator, allowing the brushes to be pressed against the slip rings by the brush springs. See Figure 55-20. Bearing service and replacement. The bearings of an alternator must be able to support the rotor and reduce friction. An alternator must be able to rotate at up to 15,000 RPM and withstand the forces created by the drive belt. The front bearing is usually a ball bearing type and the rear can be either a smaller roller or ball bearing. The old or defective bearing can sometimes be pushed out of the front housing and the replacement pushed in by applying pressure with a socket or pipe against the outer edge of the bearing, or outer race. Replacement bearings are usually pre-lubricated and seated. Many alternator front bearings must be removed from the rotor using a special puller. Refer to Figure 55-21. An example of a rotor assembly that, if tested to be within specification, is suitable to be reinstalled after the slip rings have been cleaned. Frequently asked question. What is considered to be normal rotor slip ring wear? Many alternators can be restored to useful service by replacing the only wear item that they have, which are the brushes. The brushes ride on the surface of the slip rings of the rotor and these need to be round with a surface that is free from grooves that would reduce the contact surface area where the brushes ride. Slight wear or discoloration is usually normal and can be cleaned using fine sandpaper. The slip rings also need to be perfectly round. See Figure 55-21. Alternator assembly. After testing or servicing, the alternator rectifiers, regulator, stator, and brush holder must be reassembled using the following steps. Step number 1. If the brushes are internally mounted, insert a wire through the holes in the brush holder to hold the brushes against the springs. Step number 2. Install the rotor and front end frame in proper alignment with the mark made on the outside of the alternator housing. Install the through bolts. Before removing the wire pin holding the brushes, spin the alternator pulley. If the alternator is noisy or not rotating freely, the alternator can easily be disassembled again to check for the cause. After making certain the alternator is free to rotate, remove the brush holder pin and spin the alternator again by hand. The noise level may be slightly higher with the brushes released onto the slip rings. Step number 3. Alternators should be tested on a bench tester, if available, before they are reinstalled on a vehicle. When installing the alternator on the vehicle, be certain that all mounting bolts and nuts are tight. The battery terminal should be covered with a plastic or rubber protective cap to help prevent accidental shorting to ground, which could seriously damage the alternator. Remanufactured alternators. Remanufactured or rebuilt alternators are totally disassembled and rebuilt. Even though there are many smaller rebuilders who may not replace all worn parts, the major national remanufacturers totally remanufacture the alternator. Old alternators, called cores, are totally disassembled and cleaned. Both bearings are replaced and all components are tested. Rotors are rewound to original specifications, if required. The rotor windings are not counted but are rewound on the rotor spool, using the correct gauge copper wire, to the weight specified by the original manufacturer. New slip rings are replaced as required, soldered to the rotor spool windings, and machined. The rotors are also balanced and measured to ensure that the outside diameter of the rotor meets specifications. An undersized rotor produces less alternator output because the field must be close to the stator windings for maximum output. Bridge rectifiers are replaced, if required. Every alternator is then assembled and tested for proper output, boxed, and shipped to a warehouse. Individual parts stores, called jobbers, purchase parts from various regional or local warehouses. Alternator installation. Before installing a replacement alternator, check service information for the exact procedure to follow for the vehicle being serviced. A typical installation procedure includes the following steps. Step number 1. Verify that the replacement alternator is the correct unit for the vehicle. Step number 2. Install the alternator wiring on the alternator and install the alternator. Step number 3. Check the condition of the drive belt and replace, if necessary. Install the drive belt over the drive pulley. Step number 4. Properly tension the drive belt. Step number 5. Tighten all fasteners to factory specifications. Step number 6. Double check that all fasteners are correctly tightened and remove all tools from the engine compartment area. Step number 7. Reconnect the negative battery cable. And step number 8. Start the engine and verify proper charging circuit operation. Case study: the 2-minute alternator repair. A Chevrolet pickup truck was brought to a shop for routine service. The customer stated that the battery required a jump start after a weekend of sitting. The technician tested the battery and the charging system voltage using a small handheld digital multimeter. The battery voltage was 12.4 volts, about 75% charged, but the charging voltage was also 12.4 volts at 2000 RPM. Because normal charging voltage should be 13.5 to 15 volts, it was obvious that the charging system was not operating correctly. The technician checked the dash and found that the charge light was not on. Before removing the alternator for service, the technician checked the wiring connection on the alternator. When the connector was removed, it was discovered to be rusty. After the contacts were cleaned, the charging system was restored to normal operation. The technician had learned that the simple things should always be checked first before tearing into a big or expensive repair. Summary: the complaint, the customer stated that the truck battery had to be jump-started after sitting for a weekend. The cause: the tests confirmed that the alternator was not charging and a rusty connection at the alternator was found during a visual inspection. The correction: cleaning the electrical terminals at the alternator restored proper operation of the charging system. Steps in an alternator overhaul. Step 1. Before the alternator is disassembled, it is spin tested and connected to a scope to check for possible defective components. Step 2. The scope pattern shows that the voltage output is far from being a normal pattern. This pattern indicates serious faults in the rectifier diodes. Step 3. The first step is to remove the drive pulley. This rebuilder is using an electric impact wrench to accomplish the task. Step 4. Carefully inspect the drive galley for damage of embedded rubber from the drive belt. The slightest fault can cause a vibration, noise, or possible damage to the alternator. Step 5. Remove the external fan, if equipped, and then the spacers, as shown. Step 6. Next, pop off the plastic cover, shield, covering the stator rectifier connection. Step 7. After the cover has been removed, the stator connections to the rectifier can be seen. Step 8. Using a diagonal cutter, cut the weld to separate the stator from the rectifier. Step 9. Before separating the halves of the case, this technician uses a punch to mark both halves. Step 10. After the case has been marked, the through bolts are removed. Step 11. The drive end, or DE, housing and the stator are being separated from the rear, slip ring end, housing. Step 12. The stator is checked by visual inspection for discoloration or other physical damage, and then checked with an ohmmeter to see if the windings are shorted to ground. Step 13. The front bearing is removed from the drive end housing using a press. Step 14. A view of the slip ring end, or SRE, housing showing the black plastic shield, which helps direct airflow across the rectifier. Step 15. A punch is used to dislodge the plastic shield retaining clips. Step 16. After the shield has been removed, the rectifier, regulator, and brush holder assembly can be removed by removing the retaining screws. Step 17. The heat transfer grease is visible when the rectifier assembly is lifted out of the rear housing. Step 18. The parts are placed into a tumbler where ceramic stones and a water-based solvent are used to clean the parts. Step 19. This rebuilder is painting the housing using a high-quality industrial-grade spray paint to make the rebuilt alternator look like new. Step 20. The slip rings on the rotor are being machined on a lathe. Step 21. The rotor is being tested using an ohmmeter. The specifications for the resistance between the slip rings on the CS130 are 2.2 to 3.5 ohms. Step 22. The rotor is also tested between the slip ring and the rotor shaft. This reading should be infinity. Step 23. A new rectifier. This replacement unit is significantly different than the original but is designed to replace the original unit and meets the original factory specifications. Step 24. Silicon heat transfer compound is applied to the heatsink of the new rectifier. Step 25. Replacement brushes and springs are assembled into the brush holder. Step 26. The brushes are pushed into the brush holder and retained by a straight wire, which extends through the rear housing of the alternator. This wire is then pulled out when the unit is assembled. Step 27. Here is what the CS alternator looks like after installing the new brush holder assembly, rectifier bridge, and voltage regulator. Step 28. The junction between the rectifier bridge and the voltage regulator is soldered. Step 29. The plastic deflector shield is snapped back into location using a blunt chisel and a hammer. This shield directs the airflow from the fan over the rectifier bridge and voltage regulator. Step 30. Before the stator windings can be soldered to the rectifier bridge, the varnish insulation is removed from the ends of the leads. Step 31. After the stator has been inserted into the rear housing, the stator leads are soldered to the copper lugs of the rectifier bridge. Step 32. Step new bearings are installed. A spacer is placed between the bearing and the slip rings to help prevent the possibility that the bearing could move on the shaft and short against the slip ring. Step 33. The slip ring end housing is aligned with the marks made during disassembly and is pressed into the drive end housing. Step 34. The retaining bolts, which are threaded into the drive end housing from the back of the alternator, are installed. Step 35. The external fan and drive pulley are installed and the retaining nut is tightened on the rotor shaft. And Step 36. The scope pattern shows that the diodes and stator are functioning correctly and voltage check indicates that the voltage regulator is also functioning correctly. Review questions. 1. How does a technician test the voltage drop of the charging circuit? 2. How does a technician measure the amperage output of an alternator? 3. What tests can be performed to determine whether a diode or stator is defective before removing the alternator from the vehicle? 4. Why could a defective overrunning alternator pulley or dampener cause a lack of proper charging? 5. What is procedure for replacing an alternator? Chapter Quiz. 1. To check the charging voltage, connect a digital multimeter to the positive and the negative terminals of the battery and select A. DC volts, B. AC volts, C. DC amps, D. AC amps. 2. To check for ripple voltage from the alternator, connect a digital multimeter and select A. DC volts, B. AC volts, C. DC amps, D. AC amps. 3. Which of the following would not be used to check drive belt wear? A. Groove color change, B. A tension gauge, C. A belt wear gauge, D. Belt deflection between two pulleys. 4. When performing an alternator output test, which tool should the technician choose? A. An electronic torque wrench, B. An ohmmeter, C. A load tester, D. A vacuum gauge. 5. An acceptable charging circuit voltage on a 12-volt system is A. 13.5 to 15 volts, B. 12.6 to 15.6 volts, circa 12 to 14 volts, D. 14.9 to 16.1 volts. 6. The diodes are usually replaced. A. Individually only if open, B. Individually only if shorted, C. As a replaceable rectifier component, D. As part of the stator assembly. 7. Technician says that a voltage drop test of the charging circuit should only be performed when current is flowing through the circuit. Technician B says to connect the leads of a voltmeter to the positive and negative terminals of the battery to measure the voltage drop of the charging system. Which technician is correct? A. Technician A only, B. Technician B only, C. Both technicians A and B, D. Neither a technician A nor B. 8. When testing an alternator minimum required output, what is the acceptable reading? A. 2 to 5 amperes, B. 5 amperes greater than the accessory load, C. Over 100 amperes higher than the accessory load, D. Less than 3 amperes. 9. An alternator diode is being tested using a digital multimeter. Set to the diode check position. A good diode reads if the leads are connected one way across the diode and if the leads are reversed. A. 300, 300, B. 0.475, 0.475, C. OL, OL, D. 0.551, OL. 10. How are new slip rings attached to the rotor core during alternator rebuilding? A. Machine clamped. B. Soldered on. C. Crimped on. D. Epoxy glue. End of chapter 55.